Welcome back to The Mountain Life, Healthy Living in the Wasatch. I'm Lynn Ware Peak, here with Tim Henney. Well, if you're of a certain age, like Tim and myself, you've no doubt experienced some degree of back pain, and some have an extensive relationship with pain. In the new book, Crooked, Outwitting the Back Pain Industry and Getting on the Road to Recovery, author Catherine Raymond examines the multifaceted aspects of pain, how we humans process, integrate, and deal with the pain, and the role of the brain in doing so, and how to achieve long-term sustainable recovery from often debilitating back pain. Catherine, welcome to The Mountain Life.
Well, thank you very much. I'm delighted to be with you today.
Wow. Reading through your book, Catherine, it just makes me realize that there's no one fix to back pain, and what works for one person may be even further debilitating for another person or further damaging. And maybe you could just start with your personal story about back pain and where you ended up.
I'd be happy to. But before we do that, I really want to look a little further into what you just said, because the notion that exercise is damaging to people who have ordinary axial or mechanical back pain, in other words, are not suffering from neurological or progressive neurological symptoms, i.e. pain down the leg, the notion that exercise could damage them is incorrect. So that is something we want to talk about, you know, very soon. Because a lot of people feel that if they move this way or that way, they go for a walk or they go for a bike ride or they take a swim, they may harm themselves further. And that is just not how this works. And that is a point that I make very, very clearly in Crooked. And that has been substantiated over a number of years, but most particularly in recent months in three papers that appeared in The Lancet, which is a very influential British medical journal. So I'd say the jury is no longer out. It's absolutely in. And exercise is the number one treatment for dealing with back pain. But we can come back to that, and I will now happily tell you my story.
Okay.
I began suffering. So I think we fixed that, all right, that misconception.
Yeah, right anyway. Out of the gate.
right out of the gate. So I began to deal with back pain when I was a young-ish teenager. I grew very fast. I was extremely thin and gangly, and my back was really bothering me from the time I was about 16. I rode horses very actively, and I don't really think I had the muscle to support the activity that I was doing. I think it was a bit too much given my lack of musculature. And I began to deal with back pain, and I did all through my 20s. I'd be off on a reporting trip because I've been an investigative reporter now for about four decades. And I would climb out of some motel bed and feel so incapacitated that I would have to lie on the floor for half an hour and try to pull myself back together. But somehow I managed to cope, and I continued to cope until the time my first book came out, which was in 2007. And I was traveling around the country giving talks, and I was in so much pain that I really thought I was going to have to cancel that lecture schedule. And possibly I would never be able to write another book, because although people think writers have a very cushy life and they sort of sit around all day, it's actually a very active endeavor. There is a lot of sitting, but there's also a lot of running around to interview people and climbing onto planes and into rental cars and onto trains and subways, et cetera. And it just seemed like it wasn't going to work for me. So I began looking around for solutions as a patient, and I was just as anxious to find an answer out there and find someone to fix me as any other patient that I've encountered in the years that I worked on this book. And I checked in with surgeons, and I'd already been through, you know, chiropractic, and I'd been through cookie-cutter physical therapy, and I'd done all kinds of yoga, and I'd worked with a personal trainer, and I thought, well, for sure I'm going to need surgery. But as I looked more closely at the evidence around injections and surgery and certainly painkillers, I realized that the evidence was sparse to non-existent, and also that patients were very unaware of the context in which these things were being offered to them. And that is how this book got started.
So on the one hand, you've got an industry that's been built around kind of capitalizing on the fact that people are experiencing pain and back pain, which can be debilitating. And they, you know, off what I hear from people who go through this is that one of the first things they get from a doctor is, let's get you to a specialist, and that specialist is a surgeon, and that surgeon is going to recommend that they perform surgery. But the evidence doesn't back that up.
Well, yes, no, the evidence definitely doesn't back that up. And you know, depending where you live in the United States, the prevalence of surgery can be drastically different. It can be 10 times higher in certain areas than it is in other areas that are demographically more or less identical. So, for instance, if you look at the state of Minnesota, Minneapolis has a great many spine surgeons, and Rochester, Minnesota has the Mayo Clinic, where the approach is very conservative. And the number of spine surgeries occurring in Minneapolis are vastly higher than those in Rochester. So in the same state, 200 miles apart, extremely different rates. And typically, you know, you're not far off in what you describe, but it usually goes like this. Back pain sticks around for a week, 10 days, and the patient says, you know, I guess I'm either going to go see my primary care doctor or I'm going to go see a chiropractor. So that's fork in the road number one. Patient goes to see a chiropractor. There are definitely many chiropractors now who no longer practice chiropractic. Try saying that six times fast, by the way. And those patients who are lucky enough to see a chiropractor who's very skilled in physical rehab and has studied this and made a focus of it, well, those patients may do very well. But the ones who find a chiropractor who is still indulging in typical chiropractic treatments, such as adjustments, and trying to sign them up for a large number of sessions over a year, doing x-rays repeatedly or even once, actually, those patients usually do not do very well. So you have your patients who head off to the primary care doctor who will typically these days say, you know, I want to send you to physical therapy, and this one will pay for your insurance. Well, the problem with insurance-paid physical therapy, as I make really clear in my book, is that it tends to also be what we call cookie-cutter physical therapy, where it's a large organization, and you may see the physical therapist for a brief time, but you are then handed over to an assistant who is working from a sheet of stick-figure exercises, which are the same exercises that they've given to the last 10 people with back pain. And who is probably not terribly attentive. And one of the reasons for that is that if you, quote-unquote, fail physical therapy, which people do all the time, repeatedly, by the way, then you become a candidate for surgery. The failure of conservative treatment, i.e. physical therapy injections, is an indication for surgery. At which point you will be passed on to that spine surgeon, and you may by that time have already had an MRI that scared the living daylights out of you, because most of us are very unfamiliar with MRIs. We don't look at them daily, and they are rather terrifying to look at if you don't know what you're looking at. And they come along with a radiologist note, and the radiologist note frequently will say things like degenerative disc disease, black disc, flat discs, herniated discs, extruded discs. All of this sounds really scary, but what that note never says is these are very standard and expected artifacts in a spine that is over 30 years old.
Exactly. If you're just joining us, our guest is Catherine Jacobson Raymond. Her book is Crooked, Outwitting the Back Pain Industry and Getting on the Road to Recovery. And I guess what I can say to sort of summarize what I see your book as being, Catherine, is that, you know, as we said in the beginning, there's no one perfect fix. And it really depends on your diagnosis and really, I think, knowing exactly what is wrong with your back to begin with. And then what you do is you take, you've done all of this extensive research for years and years on all of the various treatments and where they may be effective and where they may not be effective.
Part one, which is called problems, and part two, which is called solutions. And problems examine each of the interventions that are typically offered to patients, whether those are manual therapy, injections, surgery, et cetera, painkillers. And the second part of the book, Solutions, looks at various approaches to basically exercise in many forms that are effective, can be very effective, and describe how those work and why they work, and give a patient an idea of how to move forward. I do want to go back to what you said in that question, which is that it is very dependent on knowing what's wrong with your back. Well, that's actually incorrect, because it is virtually impossible to know what the pain generator is. And any time that you have what I referred to before as axial or mechanical back pain, and you see a surgeon who says, well, I think it's this herniated disc over here, and we can just go in and scrape some of that out, and you'll be fine. Just remember that the success rate for spine surgery is in the vicinity of 38%. It is almost impossible to know for most people where that pain generator is. And I can take that a step further to explain that in case of chronic pain, the pain generator is not any longer in your back. It has moved to your brain. So if you have had a muscle spasm and say you've begun to walk a little oddly, which has now affected your hip, which has now affected your shoulder, in a matter of months, that pain is essentially circulating on an endless loop from your brain. It is no longer that you have an injury in a peripheral area, such as your back, your arm, your shoulder. I think a really good example of this is that a couple of weeks ago, I was giving a dinner party, and I managed to burn my wrist quite badly while removing something from a rotisserie. And I thought, this is incredibly ugly. This is like one of the worst wounds I have ever had in a kitchen. And it's going to take a while to heal. And then I went on and did the rest of the dinner party. And in a week and a half, it was healed. And I was really never worried that it was going to change my life. However, with back pain, it doesn't work that way. When someone develops a muscle spasm, that immediate go-to reaction is, oh my gosh, I'm not going to be able to do any of the work around this house. I can't take care of my kids. I probably can't go to work. I'm definitely not going on that vacation. And that is called catastrophizing. And that is really what drives largely people to sustain the pain over months and months and often years.
So, Catherine, what you just described to me about that progression of the initial incident and then how it translates into you walk a little differently and it affects your hips and it affects your shoulder. That sounds like a misalignment issue to me. And I think a lot of people, what I hear you saying also, is that the vast majority of people are suffering from that sort of a situation that can easily be either misdiagnosed or they can be convinced that it's much more of either a degenerative issue or an injury-based issue.
Well, people are readily convinced that back pain is medicalized very, very quickly. And there are two reasons for that. One is patients beg for it to be medicalized so that someone can fix it for them. And the other reason, and these two fit together so beautifully, is that there's lots of money in it for those who can successfully medicalize it. So if what you can tell a patient is, I'd like you to, here's your exercise prescription. I'd like you to do these exercises. I'd like you to do them twice a day and come back and see me in 2 weeks. Or you can tell a patient, I need you to go get an MRI. I want you to have an injection. You're going to be referred to this surgeon. And then, you know, there's lots of cash in there. Those are the two reasons that this happens. Very typically is nowhere near as serious as people think. And the fact that they think it's so serious causes them to engage in self-talk that can be very detrimental. I mean, think of the language around back pain. You know, it cuts like a knife. I feel like I'm being stabbed. It's excruciating. I'm in agony. All of these, this language has come to be very acceptable and native to the discussion of back pain. And new trends in pain science have shown that that kind of language used either by the sufferer or by the people around the sufferer, whether those are professionals or colleagues or friends or relatives, can cause the pain to stick around much longer than if that was not the nature of the conversation.
Catherine, we're down to our last minute, but let me ask you about, is there some exercise that covers a lot of common ground that you would recommend that people do? And I'm thinking to, you know, core, you know, strengthen your core, because that helps with alignment. And you talked about your musculature when you were growing up and rapidly growing.
Well,
and it wasn't,
yes, there
it,
is. Yep. And I talked about it so many times and had so many people ask me about it that I've put it on my website, which is at cjramin.com. And that are, these are the Stuart McGill exercises called the Big Three. They are very simple to do. They're also very simple to do wrong. So it is a good idea to use the videos and also have someone spot you so that you are not dropping a hip or dropping a shoulder or so cattywampus that it is absolutely not effective. But these exercises activate the muscles that normally go on vacation in people with back pain. And a great deal of what we know to be chronic back pain is the result of using muscles that are not supposed to be used for specific tasks. So in other words, if you had to clear your dining room table and you could only use your two index fingers, that would really be an onerous chore, right? But if you can use your entire hand or two hands, really not so bad. And what happens with back pain is that people stop using the correct sets of muscles, if they ever did use them, which in some cases they never did, and they substitute tiny muscles that are not really set up for that job. And changing that and activating the muscles that are actually meant to do the work, that can make a huge difference.
Catherine, give us your website one more time before we say goodbye.
Sure. It is C.J. Raymond. So C.J.R.A.M.I.N. .com. Just like my name,
yes.
Catherine Jacobson Raymond.
And the book is Crooked.
And the book is
Crooked, Outwitting the Back Pain Industry and Getting on the Road to Recovery. Thank you so much for joining us today, Catherine.
Thank you very much. Take